It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
You guys get bored by baseball.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
This is Steve Aoki.
There's Salt Lamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Fly ball, center field, back goes Ciani to the warning track, back at the wall, it's out of here! Mark Vientos wins the game for New York with a two-run homer!
There you go, home run call of the day, Mark Vientos walk-off, Gary Cohen on the call, excellent home run, we all love walk-offs. Well, speaking of walk-offs, the last game of Sunday Night Baseball was a walk-off, Tyler O'Neill. Obviously, a little blooper, beating the Cubs. Don't worry, Cubs. You're still going to be good. You got a good team. All right. Well, I was over there, and before we get to the main podcast, I want to sort of set the scene of some of the things I did. Number one, the guy who had the walk-off, I wanted to know, this is before the ESPN crew passively asked him this question. I wanted to know, Tyler O'Neill, owner of a lot of home runs this year, would you do the home run derby? And one question that wasn't asked of him on the national broadcast, would he do the home run derby without sleeves on? All right, here's my quick conversation with Tyler O'Neill. Would you do the home run derby?
Yes.
Have you ever done a home run derby?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Is that something you would look forward to doing? You would look forward to doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that would be an honor to be represented, you know, to represent the Red Sox in the Home Run Derby. Don't know what it's going to look like. Just, you know, focusing on good at-bats for now and keep scoring the ball up, you know, the way I have been. But, yeah, it would be an absolute honor of mine.
You, because some guys don't want to do it. I mean, you're not of that mind. I mean, you know how to do BP.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I feel like my BP has gotten better, you know, especially as the years have got on to, you know, I can control the ball a little better, you know, which I feel like is translating into the game. But, you know, being able to hit the ball desirably in BP is kind of something that I picked up recently. So, you know, might be up my alley. Definitely something I want to try if it's an option for me.
So you've never, even in like Little League, I know you start baseball young. You've never done a home run derby?
Yeah, nothing like that, no.
Nothing?
Just in BP.
Have you done like a competition, done something like that in BP?
Not that I can remember. I've not like organized or anything.
What, have you watched it in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you remember about it?
Well, you know, I watched a lot growing up when it was the old format and it was 10 outs. Now, obviously, it's a little more like rapid fire, more of a conditioning test. So it's a little different, but, you know, doesn't matter, man. You know, it's always something cool and something that I've had my eye on for a little while. You know, as a kid watching the All-Star break and home run derby and watching Josh Hamilton hit those balls 500 feet and stuff. You know, if it's an option on the table for me, I'll take it.
I'm getting you fired up right now.
Yeah, it'd be pretty fun.
Have you talked to guys who have done it?
No, I haven't.
Last question, what do you do without sleeves on?
That's a good question. I'll have to think about it, though. I'll have to think about it. Yeah.
There you go. We advanced the story. All right? Speaking of advancing the story, after I talked to Tyler O'Neill, I saw another what is now a great friend of mine, Noah Kahan. Yes, Noah Kahan, the hottest musician, singer, in all of music. Yep, Noah Kahan was down in the Fenway Park field. Now, we had made a made a mission to have Brock Holt, former Red Sox, former Brewer, former Pirate, Brock Holt to be on stage, the backup singer for Noah Kahan when he came to Fenway Park later in the summer. This is what Brock, this is the video that Brock had sent that we had helped facilitate, but had had sent to along to Noah Kahan.
Noah, what's up, man? Brock Holt here. You hear that? See what I did? Put your music in the background. Most people might use Stick Season or Dial Drunk, but not me. I like this one. It's good. It's really good. I'm also driving right now, which is dangerous, but that just goes to show you that I'll take risks for things that I believe in. And I believe in us, man. Believe in me and you. Just know that I'm used to being a backup. I was one my whole life, my whole career with the Boston Red Sox. I'm ready to be yours. Let's do it, brother. Big fan.
All right. So, because now Noah Kahan and I are great friends because we met on the Fenway field, Noah wanted to make sure that he responded to Brock via video form and also via audio form. So here's Noah Kahan's response to Brock.
Brock, what's going on, man? I appreciate you listening to the Deep Cuts and for having my song in your background. I have your old ballpark in my background. Appreciate you, man. Hoping to get you out to a show, and best of luck with the season. Take care.
All right, if there's one thing I know to be true in this life, it is that Brock Holt, Noah Kahan should be on stage at Fenway Park later this summer. All right, another thing I know to be true in this life is that major league managers come and go. So we have to identify the guys who are going to be coming down the road. And yes, we are proclaiming at Baseball Isn't Boring that our manager of the future to watch, when an opening happens, a guy that should slot into that opening or at least be strongly considered is, yes, Mike Napoli. Mike Napoli, first base coach for the Cubs. We got a chance to sit down with Mike Napoli to talk to number one, to tell him the good news that we are proclaiming him the pick to click when it comes to the next manager in baseball, but also just talking to Mike. A lot to talk to about. Always good to catch up with Mike Napoli. All right, at BB Isn't Boring, at BB Isn't Boring. It's going to be a great week, a fantastic week. Already has been. If you missed it on Sunday morning, that we dropped a great podcast of Alex Cora talking about the Alex Cora Running Club and the mindset of a manager, getting your mind and your body and everything together and how that has changed for him this year. Go check out that podcast. But today's podcast is a good one. Mike Napoli, first base coach, Cubs, also the Baseball Isn't Boring manager of the future. There you go. Here's Mike. All right, there's no human being. There's no human being on the planet that I'd rather be talking to right now than Mike Napoli. Fact. So, here's the thing. Congratulations. You didn't even know I wanted to bestow this on you. You are officially the Baseball Isn't Boring manager of the future. You are who are putting all our weight behind to be a major league manager.
I really appreciate that. I hope you get to talk to me when I am.
So just remember us when you become a manager.
I will. You got it. You got an interview for sure.
Oh, all right.
I'll allow that.
All right. So that said, let's get right to the sort of the managerial. When you become a manager, all the people that you've learned from, I'm going to go down the list. All right.
There's a lot of
you want to be a skip?
No.
All right. Oh, some of the ones that jump to mind. All right. This work from top to bottom, and not top to bottom, like the most recent to the far away. So what have you learned from Craig Council?
Man, there's so many things that you learn from him. I think the number one thing is, man, he's really prepared. He's a baseball rat. He loves this game. It always seems like he's thinking 10 steps ahead of everything. You know, being prepared, and he puts a lot of responsibility on me and all his coaches to be able to do their job and make the players better. You know, having a different spring training for us and a lot more individual stuff with players, with the coaches, really trying to get a player to understand and get better on a daily basis was real huge for him. So, and then the game management, like just watching him and knowing what he wants to do, you know, pocket-wise, who's coming up, like pitch-hitting-wise, he knows, you know, guys that are reverse splits and, you know, sometimes that righty-righty matchup's better than the righty-lefty matchup. And just watching him go through the game and really managing the game and being on top of things has been really impressive to watch and, you know, learn from.
Rossi, what do you got?
I mean, me and Rossi have such a good relationship. They're different people. They're, Rossi is a little more relaxed and you know, joking around with the players a lot more.
Well, I don't think you jumped into the Vinoy pool with Craig Council.
I have not.
Yeah,
you know,
but, yeah, so yeah, anyway.
Me and Rossi's had some fun times together that I haven't gotten into with Craig yet. So, and I don't think I'm ever going to get into that with him. But, yeah, me and Rossi definitely had some good times, especially in 2013. It's such a special year. You know, the whole team, it was just the way we hung out with each other off the field. And it wasn't just, you know, we didn't just come to the field and hang out there. Like, we're on the road. We hung out with each other and did things off the field. And
was that weird, like, when you went from, like, to, you know, obviously – it's just a different phase of life when Ross becomes manager and you become coach. And
yeah, I mean, shoot, 10 years now, I think you should grow up and mature a little bit more. You know, I got married, have a family now, and my life's totally different now. So, but yeah, it was definitely a good time.
All right. So before I go to the next one, which is going to be, let's go with, I don't know. Who would be the next one? Who would be the
probably next? Francona.
Francona. I was going to mention Francona. Before you do that, because it's top of mind for me, could Pedroia be a manager?
Pedroia? He definitely could. I mean, for me, you got to be able to know the game and be able to manage people. And Pee Wee could definitely do that. I mean, he's really smart, you know, about the game. He has a way about him to get people.
Well, one thing that's weird. So, one thing, and this isn't a tribute to Dustin Pedroia. I did not mean to do this. I have plenty of time to do that because when I may or may not vote for him for the Hall of Fame, who knows? but you know, one thing that, you know, he used to hang, like, you were in this like hanging circle, right?
Yeah.
But you guys were totally different worlds. Like, he was married and had kids, and he was sort of like that. He had the ability to sort of get along with people no matter what walks of life, and right. I think that you were the perfect example of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. You got to be able to mesh with all kinds of different personalities. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just part of being managing people, you know, managing the team.
I think this is another reason why we're throwing our full support behind you. I think that's what you, I'm not even bullshitting you. Like, I think you'll be good at that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how I was as a player.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
In the clubhouse, like, I mean, I genuinely care about everybody. Like, if you're in my circle, like, in my group, like, right. it doesn't matter who you are. Like, I try to bring everyone together to be together and, you know, work to win, you know? So, I think that's what it's about. You got to be able to bring people together no matter who they are to be able to perform together as one. So, I think that's the number one important thing to be able to do to be a manager. So, I don't know. I mean, it's all I ever really heard when I was, you know, playing and stuff, and everyone's like, "Do you want to manage?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And they're like, "Yeah, I think you'd be really good at it." But, you know, so.
Did you? When did it get on your radar?
I mean, not right away, but, you know, when I started getting to the back end of my career, you know, you start thinking about what's going to be next, or
yeah,
how
how much longer am I going to play, and then what do I do? You know, I'm still young, and I don't know. I feel like, you know, this game has given me so much, and I've learned from so many people, and people have given to me. Like, I want to give back to this game, and people are like, I really enjoy having these guys trying to get them better. And
did you realize that you were going to enjoy it as much as you do? Because you're like, you're probably like, when you're playing, you're like,
I don't know. I really feel this satisfaction of when you try to get somebody to get better, or try something, and they really buy into it and they do it, and then they have success.
Yeah.
And look at you like, oh, you know, like they're grateful for
the info,
or, you know, like that gives me satisfaction. It makes me feel really good, and like to help us win, contribute. Like, I'm not playing, but I'm still trying to contribute to help people, help us win. Like that's why, that feeling is why I think I do it.
I talked to Pete Crow Armstrong for 2 minutes, right, in spring training. One of the things he said was like you teaching him base running. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, he was a really good base runner. You were a good base runner. Again, I know I'm complimenting you a lot, so
I really appreciate that. Well, yeah, for a big,
but that's what I
bigger,
mean.
Huskier guy.
Easier to say you're a good base runner when you're stealing 50 bases. But yeah.
I think there's so much more to the base running part than just stealing bases. Like, There's little things that people don't really understand, you know, about the. They'll look at guys stolen bases in his career and be like, oh, he has 200 stolen bases, a really good base runner.
Right.
There's guys that don't have a lot of stolen bases, but what they do on the bases
is
really, really important to the team. So,
So anyway, you were good at base, right? Now you're imparting that wisdom onto other people.
Yeah, and I think. Because it's become such a lost art, really. Like, yeah. I think that really drives me more to try to get it back.
Is that your thing?
Huh?
Is that your thing?
Baseball?
Yeah. Base running.
Yeah, that's what.
That's your thing.
Yeah. That's what.
I know. But you. But it's. I think it's kind of cool that, like.
I take pride in it. I want us to be able to be fundamentally sound on the bases and do things on the bases to help us win. So.
What do people do stupidly on the base? Like, what is? Give me a.
I mean, to be honest, like, a lot of guys don't maximize their primary lead or maximize their secondary lead. They don't. A lot of guys don't understand that there's timing to that too.
Yeah.
You know, when to, especially at second base, like when you start your secondary lead, you know, or to get to your secondary lead. But a lot of guys don't understand that. They don't understand why they make a bad read at second, and a lot of the time it's just the timing of your secondary.
Yeah.
So teaching that kind of stuff, and angles, and inside of the bag, and shoulder lean, head turn, like, oh, there's just so many different things.
When a guy singles you out as teaching him something, it wasn't like I said, go down the list of things that you learned. He immediately says, Mike Napoli is the straw that stirs a drink when it comes to base running. So,
I mean, I appreciate that. That's part of my job, to especially a young guy that can be really good on the bases. I mean, with the speed he has, and you know, just trying to get him to learn faster because he's in the big leagues now.
Yeah,
you know, or he was close to being in the big leagues.
Oh, dude, I can tell you fast guys in the minors who are not good base runners.
Yeah,
in the majors.
Well, I mean, so there's a lot of things that he still has to learn, and just trying to fast track that as fast as possible. To help us win at the big league level, because, I mean, outs are precious. I tell these guys all the time, like, making stupid mistakes on the bases, mental mistakes, is not acceptable here. Like, you can't have that happen, because an out here is really precious, and you need to not make them on the bases.
How? Okay, Francona.
Man. Honestly, when I got there and our relationship started really quick, like, I mean, I was in his office every single day. We played cribbage together.
Oh, really?
You know, got to know each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
he had the scouting report, though, on you.
He had the scouting report on me?
Yeah.
With what?
With, like, he's like, where he came from. like all his peeps here.
Yeah. Well, he talked to Bedroya, too, you know, so it was a different relationship than I've ever had with any other manager. You know, it was almost like pops to me, you know.
Really?
Like, like, just that he's such a genuine person. And I saw, like, how he interacted with everybody. Like, it could be the usher, you know what I'm saying? Like, how he treated people, and he really cared. You could just really tell how genuine he was, you know, to his players, staff, and you know, it was just, he was just really fun to be around and come to the field every day. He put confidence into everybody. Like, I remember times where, you know, I might have struggled a little bit, and he just put that confidence of, like, you're still going to be my four-hole hitter. Like,
oh, really? Yeah.
Just keep going. Like, yeah. Don't worry about it, you know? Like, so he puts that confidence in you when you're, you know, not going well. And really helped me out a lot that year.
How do you think, like, so... One of the things that, like, I appreciate about Tito, especially in the even last year, right? We look at the changing of the players, the different players. We talked about this. Players are different. You know, their brand, how they treat their brands, how they view the game. All of this is different. But Francona, like, seemed to be able to sort of, like, whatever he presented, it didn't matter who you had, right? And I think it probably comes back to, hey, listen, there's certain things that are just right or wrong, no matter what the generation.
Right.
And I would imagine, like, you've seen different evolutions of, like, what a manager has to be, but you know what's important. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I mean, you got to evolve to what's going on.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if not, then you're going to...
Right.
You're just going to get passed by. Like, you can't just be that old school guy.
Yeah, how would you evolve?
I found that out pretty quick.
Did you?
Like, I was really into, like... I'm an old school guy, old school player. There's certain ways to be done, but, like, you gotta adapt to what's going on now. You can't. So I have to be able to get into the analytics part of it.
You learned that when you started coaching?
Yeah. I definitely learned. I mean, I probably wouldn't be coaching if I didn't accept that.
Yeah.
You know? So it took me a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, like, just really being like, no, this is the way. Like, this is the way. Like, why isn't everyone, why are we still going the other way?
Yeah.
You know? But I think I find that happy medium. Like, I still believe you still have to have some of that old school mentality, but also the new school way, too.
Yeah.
Like, looking at the game and the numbers and all the different angles and all this stuff you can read on. Like, we got a program I can look at, and there is so many numbers that it's just sometimes, like,
it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
It is. It really is. But there's really good information, I think, that if you can take both, you know, old school way to using those that information.
Yeah. Which you never,
really good.
A few years ago, you
No, I never really, thought, like, I was going to be able to go that way.
Yeah.
But realistically, I have to.
Yeah.
I had to. So, you know, digging into it and looking into it, like, I still have stuff to learn about it. And still, on a daily basis, look at it and try to learn.
Yeah.
You know, and that just comes with talking to people and getting the information, how they get to these numbers, or, you know, just really learning that kind of stuff, how they got there, and then kind of bringing my old school way of.
How would you dealt with the information as a player? Like, obviously, there's, like, five times as much information.
Yeah, now. I mean, sometimes I think it's too much information for a player.
See ball, hit ball. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, there's sometimes it's just being that simple, you know. Like, I think sometimes we get so caught up in so much of the numbers, and, like,
it can be paralyzing.
Yeah, and then before you know it, you're trying so many different things, and then you're getting in the box, you're not even thinking about competing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget about competing because we got so many mechanical stuff and thinking about my, you know, uphill angle, or, you know, am I getting downhill or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it gets really confusing, and I think sometimes all that information is too much for a player. Like, I think for coaches, like, it's good for me to know, to maybe give the information in a different way.
And everyone's different too,
together. Yeah,
yeah.
You got to figure that out. That's the whole whole thing about it. So
this is like a job interview. I'm basically like, I'm prepping you. You know what Cleveland did for Cashy?
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
About like putting him through the 6-hour interview?
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing for you right now.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
That's why
I will. Preparation.
We will just remember us, right? By the way, first base coach.
Yeah.
Best sunglasses in the history of first base coaches.
I'm a big Boston people aren't gonna like this, but I'm a big Dolphins fan. Mike McDaniel. He's definitely on the sidelines with some.
You would be the Mike.
Really pimpy glasses. I think we might even have the same glasses.
What are they?
Dita. D-I-T-A.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like Japanese metal.
But you were
like,
before he was.
Yeah, I might have had a different. I think he has the gold ones, which I also have. I might. You know what? I'm gonna wear them today.
Ooh!
I'll wear them today. But yeah,
like, he's legit gold.
Big fan of him, and so every time I see him on a sideline with them glasses on, it gets me.
How much do those run?
Oof!
Come on.
Probably $1,100, $1,200.
There is not a first base coach in the history of baseball that are wearing a $1,200 sunglass. But that's why you're next level. I saw you. I'm like, again, I just look at them. I'm like, oh, those look different. Those look like the aviators. Because like, usually you see like the, you know, the stock.
The Oakleys. You get the baseball Oakleys. Yeah. Like, well, see, we play a lot of day games and at Wrigley's. Yeah. So I was like, man,
Did anyone get the first base and said, those are sweet glasses?
I get a lot of the guys saying, like, you're the most pimpy first base coach. You know, me and Willie, we wear our Jordans and put on the glasses.
I haven't checked.
On.
What's your button status?
Nah, I'm pretty clean now. I got it sewn up, and yeah, it's no more of the chest out. Yeah.
One of my favorite patties.
I still don't wear an undershirt, but
you don't?
Except for this first month where it's been crazy.
Yeah, well.
So it looked like the Michelin Man last
night. You gotta let it fly. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
But have you, I think last time we talked on the podcast, I asked you, have you ever simulated the Boylston Street walking down?
No, I think I had a little run of it when we lost in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Might have happened and just let some steam off, but there was nothing like that.
This is what we're talking about.
That month after we won the World Series.
Sure, shirtless with a cigarette hangout.
That was a pretty crazy time. I had to let a lot of steam off, man. There's a lot of stuff people don't really understand what happened. You know, I signed a 3-year deal, got axed because I had some hip issues. Went to a 1-year deal.
I remember.
There was a lot of money on the table that got taken off the table, and I had to play literally. I could only go on the DL one time for a 2-week period the whole season, so it was just...
Really? That was part of the contract?
That was part of, yeah.
Did it get voided?
Not voided. I wouldn't hit my incentives.
Oh, really?
That happened, so...
So you had to fight through
that,
shit?
I didn't know. Dealing with this new issue that they said I had in my hips, and it was just crazy. I had a great year. We won the World Series.
Yeah.
In Boston. It was
you know what I like? Your mom was there like the 3 days, right?
I had my mom, my family, friends. And we were just,
I mean, you don't remember her being there, but you, it's some people
we
told you.
Bar to bar. I mean, I was behind the bar taking shots with everybody. So
I told you this. You got the mayor elected that year. You did.
I put the shirt on.
You did.
Yeah.
So last thing is, you wear number 55.
Yeah.
This is going to be a trick question.
Okay.
Why do you wear? Do you know why you wear number 55?
I do, and it's Brian Butterfield.
Okay. That's which. Why does Brian Butterfield? Why did he wear number 55?
I don't know. Why.
See, this is why I'm here.
Okay.
Willie McGinnis, linebacker for the Patriots.
And that makes a lot of sense because he is
right.
Diehard.
So you basically wear it because of Willie McGinnis.
No, I'm wearing it because Brian Butterfield. Oh. He just passed it down.
I know, but I'm just trying to give the history.
All right.
It's a 2 degrees.
I like Willie McGinnis, great player.
Well, maybe I'll give him there. You got a shot. We're just here to bring people together.
All right. Perfect.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, all right.